Good morning and welcome to the Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden here with Sean Freeman. And once again, we are the guys that work at the Binary Research Institute, where we explore the possibility that ancient cultures might have been right about this idea that there is a vast cycle of time with alternating dark and golden ages, something Plato called the Great Year. But other cultures refer to it by different names, such as the Yuga cycle or just simply the precession of the equinox. And in our quest to explore this grand idea, we come across different scientists and authors and people from all walks of life. And today we have a guest with us, Dr. Claude Swanson, who has been on the show once before when his book Synchronized Universe came out. And so we'll just do a very quick summary on that, but then we'll be talking about his new book. And Sean, can you give us a little
background? Good morning, everybody. Our guest today, Dr. Swanson, was educated as a physicist at MIT and Princeton University. During those years, he worked at the MIT Science Teaching Center and a Virginia cyclotron in the summer. At Princeton, he received the National Science Foundation Fellowship and Putnam Fellowship. His PhD thesis at Princeton was done in the Gravity Group, which focuses on experimental cosmology and astronomy, and was headed by Dr. Robert Dick, or Dickey.
Well, let me interrupt you and say that this guy has like one of those 3 or 4 page resumes. So
pretty amazing.
We're gonna cut to the chase. Claude, you on the phone?
Okay. Yes, I am.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Sounds like a great connection. So, before we get into the show, is there anything else the listener needs to know about your background before we talk about your work here?
Well, I could just give a two sentence introduction to blend those together. I really got involved in physics from a desire to understand the universe from unified field theory and what are the deep questions. And about 20 years ago, I began realizing that there were some things left out of my hallowed education that that modern science needs to include if we ever want to have a really complete, successful science. I began learning about remote viewing and other phenomena like that that told me there's other things going on that our present science doesn't really understand. So that got me onto the present track, and that has led me through a lot of the research of recent years.
Great. And your first book, Synchronized Universe, talked about many of these different phenomena that you explored really from a scientific basis, I would say, even though some of them are almost associated as spiritual phenomena.
Yeah, I wanted to put a book together that pulled out the best evidence for a lot of phenomena that are not accepted by mainstream physics, and yet many of which have very good experimental evidence. The ESP and the psychokinesis experiments of the Princeton Pear Lab and people like that have odds of trillions to one against chance, that they're real. A lot of work has been done in recent years to show that these phenomena are real phenomena, and it's time for science to wake up and take a serious look at it.
Good. Well, I thought that was a real groundbreaking book, and I enjoyed it. It's been a couple of years since I read it, though. So tell us the name of your new book.
It's called Life Force, The Scientific Basis. The subtitle, which will help you understand what it's about, is Breakthrough Physics of Energy Medicine, Healing, Qi, and Quantum Consciousness.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's really trying to continue along this line of understanding what present physics is leaving out that needs to be included. And, of course, consciousness is huge because 100 years ago, the quantum physicists decided that consciousness caused the wave function to collapse, and therefore consciousness is really important in quantum physics. But science has pretty much avoided studying it ever since. And now we're finding very powerful masters of Qigong and other oriental forms of energy control who can demonstrate laboratory experiments, very dramatic ones, that prove once again that these are real forces and science needs to include them.
Isn't that fascinating? Yeah, because quantum physics, of course, is strange compared to Newtonian dynamics, and used in many of our sciences today, and yet it's sort of isolated, would you say, then?
In a way, I mean, the intuition that we develop as normal human beings and how matter behaves, you know, getting into a car, driving, playing baseball, things like that, we get certain ideas about what matter is and how it behaves. In the quantum world, things don't behave that way. There is particles jump around. They're battered by this zero-point energy. Trying to describe where a particle is, you can never really say where it is. You have to give probabilities that it's here and probabilities that it's there. So it's a much more fluctuating, fluid world. And one of the most remarkable things about it is that the scientists discovered that when you look at it, you change things. So the observer, the consciousness, actually affects the physics. And that's where it really starts to look different than the classical world that we're all used to. But in a way, it looks like that job, that process of looking at consciousness was started, you know, way back when, 100 years ago, when Niels Bohr and Albert Einstein were having their debates about the nature of quantum physics. And Einstein never liked this this idea of a wave function and probabilities, and he said it was God playing dice with the universe. And the fact that consciousness was in there, I think, didn't help it at all. It just made it seem even stranger. Now I think we're starting to see that we have an opportunity to unify consciousness with physics, because some people are producing experiments now where consciousness radically alters the laws of physics and causes effects that are very, very strange, like Alice in Wonderland type effects. And we're going to have to go back and really take a serious look at including consciousness.
Yeah. You know, I was just reading the scientist Mandelbrot recently passed away. I'm sure you read. And he was famous for looking at things a little differently. When asked, he was talking about the North American coastline. And, you know, the question is, well, how long is the coastline, you know, from the Canadian to Mexican border or something like that? And of course, he couldn't give an answer, because he says, well, you know, it might appear just to be, you know, 2,500 miles or whatever it measures on the map, I forget. But, you know, if you look closely, there's a lot of little bays and turns and things in there. So if you measure those, you know, we're getting to 4,000 miles. And then if you look even closer still, there's a lot of nooks and crannies in there. So maybe it's 6,000 miles. And he said, you know, it just goes on endless. And it depends how we look at things determines the measurement of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One of the exciting things for me in putting this book together was trying to find what the best evidence is for this energy. It has a name, of course. In Western science, it's often called subtle energy. Among Chinese, it's often called qi. The Hindus is called prana, and the Russians have a new science they have developed from this energy, which they call torsion. However, they're all virtually the same thing, and they're also closely related to what we call dark energy and dark matter. So if we could ever get the physicists to talk to the energy healers, well, they may discover that it's the same energy that they're all working with. One of the dramatic aspects of this energy is that it is capable of healing people. The Qigong masters of China for thousands of years have been using this energy to produce dramatic healing effects, and it's one of the standard elements of Oriental medicine. But it has a lot of other properties as well. At this point, the Russians have been able to develop a theory for it, and even come up with patents and devices. They can use it to transmit signals over large distance. It's unusual, different from light. It doesn't seem to have much energy. It's involved with spins interacting with spins, at a physicist's way of talking, and it travels much faster than light. So it has some really unusual properties, and it just makes a whole interesting chapter for the new physics.
Well, you know, is it really measurable?
Well, here's a measurement that has been done. The Russian physicists, and this has been repeated several times, build a telescope where they have a reflector, a parabolic reflector that, you know, takes the sunlight and focuses it at a point. They have a special detector that can detect this torsion energy. They put a plate over the front of the telescope so no ordinary light or heat energy can come in. Then as they scan this telescope across the sky, they're able to see the sun because it does produce this kind of energy. But they get three peaks in the signal from the sun. One peak comes where we would normally see the sun in the sky. That's where light would also show up, and it's responsible. It's because it takes 8 minutes for light to get from the sun to the Earth, so there's that delayed signal. They also get two more peaks. One peak is corresponds to where the sun is instantaneously right now. If light travel at infinite speed, that's where the second point comes. And the third one happens at 8.3 minutes in advance of that, which would occur if light actually traveled backwards in time. So this is a very interesting kind of energy, and it opens up a whole bunch of phenomena that, you know, would have been science fiction in an earlier time period.
Yeah. Boy, that's amazing. So are there some papers on that, by the way?
There are. My book, Life Force, tried to go through everything that's available. Of course, most of the best stuff is in Russian. Some have been translated. My book's about 720 pages, and I collected a lot of the best evidence, not just from the Russians, but also from other groups of scientists. The Germans, in fact, in the 1850s, Baron von Reichenbach, a German chemist, did a lot of research with this energy. So I was able to compare the Russian work with his work and find a lot of correlations. So I have a fair amount of confidence that this stuff is real. Also, the Russian government supported this research for several decades. And there are, at this time, lots of papers available if you speak Russian. There are fewer if you speak English.
Okay, well, then I'll just look to your book for.
Yeah, my book, I really tried to make it as tutorial and clear as possible. It has lots of figures, lots of drawings, and good footnotes and things. So I think it's a pretty good way to try to get a first look at this science. I mean, to me, this whole Russian torsion science, which they consider to be equivalent to the paranormal phenomena and the psychic phenomena that in the West we have studied, but they've taken it from the point of view of hard science and laboratory physicists and really tried to put it on a much more a strict mathematical basis. So, I mean, to me, it's a whole new chapter in this that whole strange story.
Hmm. You know, I've tried to study this subject a little bit over the years, and it's hard to find good scientific data on it. I'm probably most familiar with some of the Vedic writings on, you know, prana, and they actually talk about different types of prana.
Yes.
Is that what you find then?
I do. I mean, the subject is somewhat complicated, and I probably oversimplify it a little bit. I try to go with theosophical writing, which tends to come from the yogis, one level removed. And I also use descriptions from various masters, more often the Chinese than the yogic. But, there are particles that have energy, and they have light, and they have motion, and they play roles in the living body and in the subtle bodies. And so I've tried to compare things as much as possible. I'm not a clairvoyant myself. I have friends who are clairvoyant. I talk to them about what they see, and I also look at American healers who are often able to see these energies. But it's always a process of trying to compare as many sources as you can and figure out what the truth is.
Okay, you just used the term particle. So is it really made up of particles, or?
Well, I'm using the word particle loosely. Some of the prana are called globules. They're bright points of energy as seen in clairvoyant sight. I mean, that's one of the ways that they're described when they're seen outside. And I can probably find a quote for you here to back me up if you're questioning me. but they occur in several different forms, but they do appear sometimes in a particular form.
Okay. I was reading, listening actually to one of the SRF brothers. Brother Bhaktananda did a series of lectures on prana, and he was saying there's different pranas associated with different chakras in the body, different vibrations that are used
for
different things.
Yeah, and they have different colors as well. Yeah.
Okay, so intuitive people will see them with different colors then. Huh?
Right, and the way they appear does depend on the level of consciousness of the person observing too. In terms of how much detail you see and whether you see, the easiest ones to see apparently show up as black and white particles. The white ones being the most active and full of motion and tend to carry the life energy. The black ones tend to be more involved in structure and are harder to see. One of the great healing masters of modern times is named Choa Koksui, who was involved with Professor Joey Jones in a 10-year experiment on doing pranic healing on people. And he says air prana, solar prana, and ground prana are made of white or general prana. Air and ground pranas are called vitality globules in esoteric parlance because they're seen clairvoyantly or by a person with slightly more sensitive eyes. They appear as small spheres or globules of light. Some of the bigger air vitality globules can be easily seen just by staring at the sky for a few minutes, especially just before sunset. So, you know, it depends on how good you are and how advanced you are in seeing these things as far as what you see. I've tried to, have a little bit in my book about the clairvoyants and what they see and how they describe things, but I've tried to emphasize as much as possible scientific measurements. So that's been my bias here.
Yeah. You know, putting this in context of the cycle of the ages, the people that study these cycles, the yugas and so forth, like Sri Yukteswar wrote about, would say that, you know, in the very lowest ages, mankind is only aware of the material universe, that which he can see and touch and, you know, feel with his five senses. And then as we come into the Dwapara Yuga, which happened, you know, roughly in conjunction with the Renaissance, mankind begins to discover electricity, magnetism, finer forces. And yet that's supposedly just barely up the arc of the ascending age. And then, of course, they make reference to higher ages where mankind becomes aware of more subtle things still. And I guess this is what you're talking about, and we don't really even have a great vocabulary for it all at this point.
Right. Or, we don't. And where we do have a vocabulary, we have maybe too many different descriptions in different languages and from different cultures. So trying to get translation between, from one to the other is a challenge. One of the things I try to do in the book is look at all the sources from the Chinese up to the Russians and the Wilhelm Reich and everything in between, the yogis as well, and try to cross-compare so that I feel I'm able as best possible to really check out how reliable these things are. I mean, for example, the yin and the yang descriptions of Chinese medicine correlate with the Russian descriptions of left and right-handed torsion, and they also correspond to different types of prana. So by looking at enough, go ahead.
And to the gunas, you know, that there is something that's lifting up and pulling down. And by the way, I just noticed Sean's putting his thumb down there because we're at the end of our first little segment. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
I'm glad we're not in the Roman Colosseum right now, because thumb down is not a very good thing to see.
Oh, right. No, this is not the Dark Ages. We've progressed.
Yeah. So I saw Gladiator.
No.
Yeah, but I think you're totally right. We are in a new age now. We're transitioning from an awareness of electromagnetism to an awareness of the subtle energies, and that is indicative of moving into a higher age. I totally agree with that. And one of the interesting things I've learned about that is that these energies really can affect consciousness. They not only are created by consciousness, but they affect our level of consciousness, and they can enhance intelligence and intuition. That's one of the side effects of certain types of torsion or of subtle energy. So,
and can you talk about a case or example? What do you mean more specifically there?
Let me give you a couple of examples. The discoverer of the Russian work, which he called torsion, was Nikolai Kozarev, and he discovered from experiments done in Russia that if you apply left-handed torsion to a person, say surround them in a field of left-handed torsion, which is a type of energy, their intelligence, their intuition seems to improve. Magnetic healers like Davis and Rawls, who are the classic, these are the authorities on American magnetic healing, using magnets for healing, have found that the south pole or the south pointing pole of a magnet, when you place that on your forehead and over your third eye, your intuition and your ESP reception improves. And it turns out that that is the end which produces the left-handed torsion, which is consistent with what Kozarev was finding. Also, if you build a pyramid, it turns out that beneath the apex of the pyramid, the shape of it creates left-handed torsion. Therefore, your intuition would be expected to be better if you're sitting in beneath the apex of a classic pyramid. So these are just some observations about the effect of left-handed torsion. There are a variety of experiments that have been done to show it, but
so it's produced by magnetism in one case and a geometric form, but the word produced isn't correct here. It's these just sort of help to channel or activate, or what am I trying to...
Yeah, that's more accurate, I think. Yeah, it turns out even though we call it magnetism, we think about it is being from the pole of the magnet, it's really the spinning of the particles, the spinning of the electrons, which generates the torsion force and generates this type of field. So spinning objects generate torsion. And if you, for example, according to Kozarev, if you stand at the North Pole, the top of the Earth, and look down at it, the Earth will appear to be turning to the left in your perspective, and that'll put you in a left-handed torsion field, which he would say would also increase your ESP. So we have a lot of different ways here of accessing a torsion field and supposedly getting an improvement in ESP. For me, this was interesting because one of the most puzzling and intriguing observations of recent years has been James Spottiswoode's discovery that at a certain time of day, our ESP is enhanced. He compared data for remote viewing experiments, ESP experiments over many, many experimenters in different laboratories. He was trying to find out what it is that enhances our ESP. And it's not weather. It's none of these things you might be looking for. The only real reliable effect was when it is done. And it turns out it's a sidereal time. It depends on what constellation is overhead at the moment you do your ESP reception. And it's the constellation Virgo. It's called 13.5 hours sidereal to astronomers. It means basically Virgo is overhead. And it turns out that in Virgo, there's a very unusual cosmological feature, a big, strong concentration of dark matter. So when dark matter is overhead, we just happen to have the best ESP, and it's about four times better than average during the day. So it appears also to confirm this idea that left-handed torsion, dark matter, which is considered to be the same thing by the Russians, that enhances ESP.
Okay, well, I got to slow you down here because I've studied dark matter from a, sort of a standard physics point of view, and you know, when it was first hypothesized, people thought, well, there's just a bunch of planets and stars that we can't see that are having this gravitational effect, so they called it dark matter. And then upon further investigation, of course, they said, well, we don't find any large objects there, so maybe it's weak, you know, interactive particles or WIMPs. And that's sort of where a lot of the astrophysicists are now, searching for some sort of, you know, invisible, very tiny, but still looking for a particle. And it sounds like you're using the term, though, in a slightly different way? So what is dark matter?
Yeah,
nobody really agrees on it yet, do they?
Right. No, in the West, there's no agreement at the present time. When I was in grad school, I mean, I was studying, you know, we were doing cosmology at the Gravity Group at Princeton, and people didn't talk about it then. This was in the 70s, and no one had seen these observational effects, and everyone assumed Einstein's model was basically. You know, the dark matter has really come about because of observations, of noticing that the outer part of galaxies move too fast for the current gravity models.
Right, they're not following Newton's laws, as we know.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, they're indicating to us that there must be a lot more matter there, about 10 times more than we could see just based on the stars and et cetera.
Right.
That's where the idea of dark matter came from, but no one really knows what's causing it. If the Russian idea is right, then you can think of dark matter as a form of energy, or perhaps just a modification of space, which is the same thing, so that in certain areas, the properties of space are modified somewhat by, you know, by the inclusion of this extra type of energy, this extra type of spin called left-handed torsion, and that's what causes the properties of space to be a little bit different there. It turns out, by the Russian model, there should be also areas with the other kind of spin, which would have the opposite effect, namely the gravity there would be weaker. It might even be repulsive. Well, it turns out that astronomers see regions of space which act as though they are repulsive, and they call this dark energy. So the West, we don't really have models for it, but some of the Russians do.
Right. Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back. Okay, so the dark matter you're referring to then is even more subtle than what most astronomers or astrophysicists are theorizing, although we should point out really nobody's found anything yet, so maybe indeed it is more subtle. And then you just touched on dark energy, and just so the audience knows, generally speaking, this is even more mysterious than dark matter, Our physics require even more of it to explain what's going on, and the main killer observation there is that all the galaxies are moving away from each other, and not just moving away, but at an accelerating speed, which indicates there's a tremendous amount of energy that nobody knows what it is or where it came from or why it's doing it.
Yeah, let me tell you one more piece of data that might help, well, at least with my explanation, because a lot of the Russian work is not based on somebody just, you know, sitting down one day and starting to conjecture. A lot of it's really based on laboratory experiments. For example, one of the ways you create subtle energy or torsion is by what they would call an irreversible process. Chemical burning, for example, solar burning in the sun. That's like a process that proceeds, and as it does, it increases entropy, which is a physics name for randomness. Processes that have that property, that act that way, have been found to produce left-handed torsion, which has a gravitational effect, okay? These experiments have been done in the following way. They took a very sensitive balance that can turn. You take a small thread, suspend from it a horizontal bar with a big weight on the short end and a long arm on the other end that can rotate horizontally in the horizontal plane. Put it in a container with shielding of various kinds, and then you see what will affect the behavior of this pointer, which we call a torsion balance. And what's been found is if you take one of these processes where entropy is increasing, and a simple example would be a cotton swab that you dip into acetone. Okay. As the acetone evaporates, it increases entropy. You take that and put it near the pointer, the mass point on this torsion balance, it has an effect on it. And this is after you've reduced all the other, you know, effects that confuse you, like temperature and electrical effects, things like that. There is a net effect of attraction. It actually attracts the pointer to it, and it acts just like gravity, basically. And if you take another type of process in which entropy is decreasing locally, and there are various types like ice freezing, things like that, where entropy locally decreases, and take one of those and put it near the pointer, it actually pushes it away.
Very
it acts like anti-gravity or repulsion. So they've been able to generate left-handed and right-handed torsion in the lab and verify these effects. And in fact, if your readers go back to one of the great classic books of 1970 called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain by Ostrander and Schroeder, they spent a couple of years over in Eastern Europe and Russia, and they interviewed this man Kozarev back at the time where not even too many Russians knew what he was doing. And he was doing experiments like that even then. And it's really interesting to go back and you can sort of confirm for yourself that these experiments really did happen.
Fascinating, yeah.
And this was happening when exactly? Was this during the Cold War?
Kozarev made his initial discoveries and hypotheses in the mid-50s from watching binary stars. Hey, there's an interesting connection. He watched how binary stars evolved. And he concluded that there was something wrong with our current physics, that there was information exchange that could not be explained by current thermodynamics. And that was really his first lead, the experiments he began doing in the 60s and 70s to confirm his ideas. And then others have reproduced them since then. Lavrentiev has duplicated his experiments.
Hmm. Excellent.
Yeah, it really seems like the Russians are... at the forefront of this kind of experimenting, at least in terms of making it official. Obviously, we've talked about the Chinese and the ancient Indians having knowledge of this stuff in the past, but in terms of modern culture and science doing the experiments, they really are quite a bit of things happening in Russia.
Well, we used to have our PEAR lab over at Princeton, but I guess that's been shut down, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. Too bad.
Yeah.
But, they really have had a different approach. I think sometimes it's good to have different societies with different ways of looking at things, and somebody will make a discovery from looking at things in a different way.
Yeah. Great. Okay, so this book is 720 pages, so give me just a quick glimpse at some of the main chapters then.
You bet. Let me go to my introduction and try to do that, because it's a little easier than... There are 13, just like in the first book, there are 13 chapters plus the introduction. I'm trying to go over best evidence. In the first chapter, I talk about subtle energy, the evidence for a lot of different manifestations of subtle energy and different types of phenomena. Subtle energy is one of these very, very flexible things that appears in lots of different ways in everyday life, usually at a kind of a weak or subtle level. Chapter 2, I go over laboratory experiments for energy healing. Chapter 3, I go through the German work with von Reichenbach in 1850, seeing this energy and how it behaves, and Wilhelm Reich's work, etc. Acupuncture is chapter 4. Chapter 5 is auras and chakras, how this energy goes about creating the field around us that we call the subtle field. Clairvoyant observations there, as well as scientific measurements. 6 is about concentrating subtle energy. When you begin to build up this stuff into high levels, very strange new physical phenomena happen. If you look at Victor Schauberger, the water wizard, he built devices that rotated and circulated water in a vortex-type flow. It looks like he was doing the same thing, namely creating and concentrating torsion. But he got some very wild effects from it. So he would get, you know, levitation and increased energy and all kinds of strange things.
And what was the application here? I mean, was it just building fountains, or what was he doing?
Well, he was certainly interested in the nature of water. You know, I'm not sure how much you know about him, but he grew up in a family of forest wardens in Austria. He loved nature. He wanted, I think one idea would be that it makes purer water. It makes water that has that liveliness of spring water, a healthy quality to it that normal water does not seem to have. But he also found he could make what appear to be like free energy devices, over unity devices. He got some really wild effects when he began building these devices. And you know, it's hard to say what his original intention was, but the main point is when you concentrate this energy, you get some unusual effects. You have Wilhelm Reich, who built his orgone accumulators. Orgone appears to be one more name for this type of energy. And one of the hallmarks of this energy is a nonlinear quality. Namely, it attracts more of the same sign to it. So you get enough of it, and it starts to attract more. You get nonlinear runaway type effects when you do that. Chapter 7 is about Kozarev, and Chapter 8 is about psychotronics. So these are about applications of these torsion ideas to devices.
Hold that thought right there, and we'll get to the rest when we get back.
Okay. Chapter 9 is earth energies, ley lines and sacred spaces, because those are also ways that this energy is manipulated and used. And this is another example of how the ancients appear to have understood this energy probably much better than we do. A lot of the megaliths and structures of ley lines appear to be constructed to collect this energy, to gather it together, and to produce it or to swirl it into certain shapes that have effects on consciousness and spirituality. Chapter 10 is about higher dimensions of subtle energy, how it affects shape and sound and color and fragrance. It has a lot of higher dimensional aspects, and I'm just trying here to stick with the ones that we can prove the best, but clearly the more deeply you look at it, the further it goes in terms of higher dimensions and more subtle phenomena, crystals, for example.
Just on earth energies for a moment, I was over at the Megalithomania conference earlier this spring, and they had a lot of earth energy guys talking. We're, you know, amongst the megaliths there at Avebury and Stonehenge, and had some great tours and stuff. And it was my first experience sort of inside, close up with the stones. And, you know, it felt really good, which is something I didn't expect. I didn't think it would be like a, you know, meditation event. But that was there. And a couple of the presenters actually had some photos, which were, one was taken at Avebury, where they showed, it was a nighttime photo, and so it was fairly black and white looking, but a spot in the ground where it was coming out almost like a sprinkler. You would have thought it was a sprinkler, except there was no sprinkler in the spot. You know, we could walk by it during the day.
Yep.
And then another fella, he had found a fairly untouched henge in northern England, and went there on a solstice and just spent all day there from before sunrise to after sunset. And right after sunset, he'd been taking photos all day and was very reverential towards the space. A line appears, and he's got about 30 different photographs of this, and it's almost the path of the sun towards, what was this? This was the summer solstice, I believe. And it looks like almost as if the grass right there is glowing a little bit orange, and it's a distinct line. So this was new to me. I had heard of these things. I never thought that these things would lend themselves to photographs, and I guess they don't very easily, but there were a couple there.
Yeah. I went over there in 99 with the intention of looking at the crop circles, which I did, but I was not prepared either for the feelings, for the energy and the way that you feel that spirituality that is present there and the altered states that it can create. And I found the same thing about Avebury, and just a remarkable sense of, you know, they were really producing sacred sites. And I think a lot of the feelings you get are engineered. They're intentional from the way the energy flows. So those folks who built those understood some things that we have to rediscover.
Yeah, and maybe it's a little bit of both. Maybe they're using some features of the landscape plus some additional engineering with the megalithic structures to create it. But, definite feeling. Same thing at, I got at Newgrange and at Terra, especially at Terra in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you look in China, you know, the Feng Shui masters, there's evidence now that they were engineering their landscapes on a very large scale, digging up hillsides, moving things around. So the Chinese apparently had a similar idea. They called them dragon lines. The English called them ley lines, but it's the same energy. So this energy's been around a long time, and the ancients seem to have some real insight into it.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, so just finish the other ones real quick, then I hope we have a minute or two to talk about the Vishnunabhi effect.
You bet, yeah. So Chapter 11 is on biophotons, and it shows how the biophoton structure in the body goes to create and interact with the torsion field or the aura around the body, and also how long-range healing, energy healing, is accomplished. Sort of in a physics, so step-by-step connection between those. Chapter 12 is a sort of survey of many different approaches to how energy is used and how energy healers operate. Chapter 13 lays out a structure of a theory for how we can enlarge our present science to explain these effects and to understand them.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Okay. Well, is that anything you can summarize very quickly as far as the theory?
Well, in a sense, it's built from the model that I outlined in the first book, the Synchronized Universe book. The essence can be thought of as torsion. These torsion energy exchanges happen at a very, very tiny level. Every time a particle zigs and zags at the Planck scale, these particles are emitted and absorbed, and they kind of become the substrate for what we call reality, and even their subquantum. So, and the connections are all holographic, which makes it possible to explain how time can be shifted. We can move in time so easily in these higher planes.
Right.
So that's probably enough to go into right now.
I think so. Speaking of shifting time, we're actually right near the end of this show, so we'll cut off, and then we'll keep talking to you afterwards, and maybe we can put it on as a bonus piece that'll be on iTunes.
I could do a one sentence or not?
Go ahead.
The one sentence would be that because torsion or subtle energy is distributed in space, it happens in lumps. You get lumps where more left-handed torsion, lumps where more right-handed torsion. If you're in a region where there's more left-handed torsion, you will have this benefit of more intuition, of more ESP, and of higher intelligence as a result. So in the bottom line, kind of quick answer, that would be a way to explain how golden ages could occur if the Earth is moving through such a region of space.
Ooh. Okay, we'll leave it on that thought.
That's a good lump.
And we'll be right back talking to Claude Swanson. Thank you for listening to The Cosmic Influence. If you'd like more on Dr. Claude Swanson's work, we would invite you to check out his latest book, Life Force, The Scientific Basis. It has a long subtitle, Breakthrough Physics of Energy, Medicine, Qi, etc. And he's also got a website.
John? Yes, Dr. Claude Swanson's previous book, Synchronized Universe. So you can go to www.synchronizeduniverse.com.
Oh, one more thing. We do have a one-day seminar coming up with myself, Boris Fritz, and John Dering talking about Cycle of the Ages.
Yeah, so for more information about the Cycle of the Ages, it's a one-day seminar, Saturday, November 13th from 9 to 4. You can get more information at cpaconline.com. And the number to call is 949 949- 768-5272, extension 222. It's going to be at the Radisson Hotel in Newport Beach. And again, for more information, you can go to cpaconline.com.
And once again, bring on the higher ages.